right, we've got a lot to get to and a couple games to watch, so let's just go right into podcasting.
All right, let's do it. We got to get this thing done quick. We got a hockey game.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's a I don't want to build it up in my mind.
Especially because they will have already known their. You'll know if it went well because we'll be in a better mood. And if it didn't go well, we will not. You'll know by my recap about 12 hours ago. I wonder when the jokes are going to get old.
Yeah. So let's talk about Milton Bradley.
Milton Bradley. All right. So, leaving aside whatever he did Tuesday, I'm tired of saying that. Right now, as I'm saying this, Milton Bradley is 6-for-48. He's batting 146. And, I mean, he hit the big home run. He hit a couple big home runs. Had a big double on Monday night that scored Casey Kochman, or scored somebody, and very, very much did not score Kendrick. But there's still a lot of concern with Bradley because right now he's striking out 50% more often than he did, even as a Cub, when he wasn't really Milton Bradley at the plate. So there's legitimate concern because Bradley's not making contact a whole lot. When he does make contact, the ball's going a long way. There's no doubt in my mind, or anybody's mind, but just the strikeouts, you can't just look at him and say, oh, you know, it's a batting average on balls in play thing, because he is legitimately doing worse than he has in the past. And that is a point of concern.
Yeah. I think the important thing is to really identify the scope of concern right now with Milton Bradley. And as you said, that's contact rate. But that's about it. He's drawing walks at the same rate that he always did. He's seeing a lot of pitches. He's always consistently been around a 4-pitch per plate appearance, 3 so far this season. So he's not, you know, hacking away mindlessly. He's being patient. He just is missing a lot more often, which is probably a transient thing. It's hard to really say. You look at numbers before when he's gone through slumps like this.
Right. So right now, as I'm saying this, Milton Bradley has a career contact rate of about 78%, and I'll say this slowly because I know numbers are annoying when you listen to them. Career contact rate, 78%. So far with the Mariners, 65%. That's way low, and that's way lower than the 77% he was at in 2009. So Bradley's contact, it's not just strikeouts. He is actually missing the ball more often. But if you go back, what is Milton Bradley's best season? Clearly 2008, when he was just on fire with the Rangers. He was a terrific hitter all season long. And in August of that year, August was no different because in August he put up an OPS over 1. It was his fourth consecutive month with an OPS over 1, as a matter of fact. Holy shit. Bradley was
yeah, he was good.
Incredible. But anyway, so he was really good in August of 2008. But that August, his contact rate with the Rangers was 64%. He was striking out a lot with Texas. I mean, he was drawing walks, he was hitting for power, but he was striking out a lot. But that contact problem went away. You know, his contact recovered in 2009. I think it probably recovered the next month, although he didn't play a lot the next month with Texas, I don't think. But, okay, yeah. So
no, because he was holding out for that contract.
In September, what did he actually play in September? He got into 15 games that September, and his contact went from 84% or 64% in August to 83% in September. So yeah. It's
so
one of those things. He was fine. It's an important statistic to look at because it does stabilize a lot faster than a lot of the other statistics we look at. But we still have a really small sample. It's the start of a year. Got to give Bradley some time. He's done this before. He should be fine. I don't think there's any reason to freak out.
No, I don't think so either. A couple more things, just pointing out things that are the same. He's swinging just as often as he ever has in the past, so it's not that he's reaching for pitches any more often. Mm-hmm. He's swinging at balls roughly about as often as he ever did in the past, and he's making contact on balls, by balls I mean pitches out of the strike zone, about as often as he ever has in the past. The only real thing that's different is that he's missing pitches in the strike zone that he swings at about twice as often as he used to. And frankly, I have no foundation to say this, but that doesn't strike me as something that is going to sustain itself. Because it's not, you know, if his ability to make contact went down between, you know, the past and this year, I would expect a more uniform drop and regardless of wherever the pitch was located. But the fact that he's just suddenly missing pitches in the strike zone, but he's still able to make just as much contact on pitches out of the strike zone, strikes me as just some sort of temporary thing. I mean, we are talking about 48 plate appearances. This is not that much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his home run per a fly ball is the same as it always has been. Well, the walk rate's a little bit up. Yeah, well, and he's whatever. Shut up, Jack.
I mean, they were two. Well, actually, he should have three home runs, right?
Well, technically, yeah. So it'd be even higher. The only thing that's really down is he hasn't gotten hit by a pitch yet, which, boy, am I, I'm looking forward to seeing that happen after his antics already. But,
imagine if it happens tonight or like in his next plate appearance when he's already clearly a little frustrated with himself.
Yeah, but I mean, he drew 11 hit by pitches last year with the Cubs. He drew 9 with Texas. He's got 0 so far. So it's hurting his on-base percentage a little bit, but, I mean, you bump his average up to where it should be once it recovers. And yeah, his batting average on balls in play is a little bit low too, compared to his like line drive rate. But, really the take home message is there's only two things that are really different right now with Milton Bradley. And that's that he's missing pitches in the strike zone, which I think is probably temporary. And, a higher percentage of his batted balls are going for pop-ups right now, which again is probably temporary. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just like a little bit more. He's hitting 3 to 4 times more pop-ups than he ever has before. So that might also just be tied with why he's missing pitches in the strike zone. And it's probably just something they need to go back and look at some tape. He might be, you know, hitching his swing a little bit or something. I don't know, but they'll probably figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't even say that he's necessarily pressing. I mean, he hit a couple big home runs that you would think would, like, relieve the burden on the player's back. Not that I can pretend to get into Milton Bradley's head because, holy crap. But, I don't know, we've talked about it, so it's just something you keep an eye on it, but you shouldn't freak out. As we said, he's hit a bunch more pop-ups, but at the same time, he's hit 3 pop-ups. So it's really misleading when you look at the percentages because they tell you a story that who knows what those pop-ups actually were.
But, right. We're talking about so few at-bats right now that, yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention about that, because he is starting in a couple hours, i.e. last night, in left field again. And Gutierrez is starting in center field after his little kind of possible brush up and everybody freaking out about his groin, and it's
for a different reason than
usual. Yeah, but it does bring up the fact that we're for Tuesday night's game. We have Milton Bradley, who's always kind of a, you know, he's a couple days off of getting a late scratch because of a sore knee. Mm-hmm. We have Franklin in center field, who was just removed in the last game for a sore groin. And the reason we have to do that is because we have Griffey and Sweeney on the damn team. And so this is your weekly reminder that, yeah, they're still there and they're still a problem.
They are terrible. I mean, how long do you think that Sweeney and Griffey right now are a combined 9 for 45 with a double?
Yeah.
That's bad. That's not good production. They're bad players. It's so hard because you can't argue against the chemistry, but you can argue against the chemistry impact when they're 9 for 45 with a double and their production is just so low. Like, there's no possible way, right? I mean,
do you really need both? Do you need both? You don't need both. Fine. I understand that they can't dump Griffey and Sweeney both. Right. That's just not realistic. But to be pragmatist, there's no reason they need to keep both. And okay, yes, they're not dumping Griffey. There's no way they're doing that. But man, Sweeney does not need to be on the team. Or, you know, they don't even need to release Sweeney necessarily or release Griffey. Like, but just maybe have a, you know, unofficial policy where, okay, you two can both stay on the team and draw your paychecks and whatever, but one of you needs to be on the DL at all times. Mm-hmm. We don't care who. You guys can switch off. You can rock, paper, scissors for it or whatever. I don't care.
Just make them box each other and just get hurt for a couple weeks.
Well, no, because the other one's probably still going to play once in a while, and I'd prefer that they not intentionally injure themselves. But it needs to happen so we can get Milton Bradley into DH a little bit more often. We can get Ryan Langerhans back up, and we can You know, so for days like this, we could have Burns in left field. We could have Langerhans start center and give Gutierrez a day off to recover and Bradley some DH time or whatever, or Goody play DH. Or we need that flexibility back in the outfield, and we've gotten away with it through 14 games, but I don't know. I just don't know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, we've seen Milton Bradley be a late scratch because of a sore knee. I mean, if he injures himself seriously because he's been playing left field all the time, I don't know what that does to the team. It does something pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. And it is worth noting that just playing DH in no way removes the injury risk. I mean, we saw Gutierrez. It looks like he got hurt running the bases. So Bradley would still be a risk. But on the other hand, he's not really running any bases right now. He's either trotting around the bases or walking back to the dugout. So there's really nowhere for him to get hurt. I understand the argument for keeping Griffey and the chemistry. I'm like, I have no idea what impact there is with Milton Bradley playing as a teammate of one of his idols. Like, that probably helps a lot. It probably helps keep Bradley stable. But, like, I don't want to draw conclusions or be racist about anything, but something tells me Milton Bradley and Mike Sweeney probably don't get along that well. I imagine the influence is a little different for Sweeney than it is with Griffey. So then you're using Sweeney to, I guess, keep the rest of the team happy. But I think Sweeney's there for, like, coaching staff chemistry, because I feel like that's really what he is. I mentioned on Twitter the other day, but Mike Sweeney is a coach. All you ever see him do is walk back and forth in the dugout clapping. Like,
he's a coach.
He's like the people that you keep along the sidelines during a cross-country meet to keep you motivated. Like, you're on mile three, it's like, go, Ken! Go. I don't know why Ken's the first name to come to mind. He's not doing any running. I got a gif that him running third yesterday. I had some ideas.
Even in addition to, I'll just throw that out there too, the other reason they're not getting rid of Griffey anytime soon is the financial reasons. You know, we just saw the lowest home attendance for any game in Safeco Field history. You can argue about what impact Griffey has on the attendance at this point, but I don't think anybody's going to say he has zero. Mm-hmm. All you'd have to do is actually go to a game and you could tell. I mean, he still gets the loudest cheers when he walks up to the plate. It's been a year. I would have thought people have gotten over it. They haven't. Possibly because the scoreboard, you know, tells them to be more into it when Griffey's batting. I don't know the reason, but there's definitely people that go to the game still because of Griffey. And they wouldn't be having four Griffey bobbleheads this year if that weren't true. So, yeah, Griffey's not going anywhere. Yeah. The best we can hope for is that he goes on the DL. So, speaking of the DL, you know who comes off the DL today, being Tuesday, is Russell Branyan.
So he does, and
Russell Branyan is starting, starting his first game.
Starting at today. First base. As a matter of fact, the Indians have, they called up Russell Branyan from the minors where he was doing some rehab, and they sent down this outfield prospect, Michael Brantley, who, I don't know anything about him, but he seems like he's probably their Michael Saunders. And so they are not just putting Branyan at DH because they have one Travis Hafner. And between those two, it's not hard to figure out which one you want in the field.
Yeah.
So they're putting Branyan at first. And to make room, they're moving Matt LaPorta to left field. Matt LaPorta, of course, being the big-time former Brewers first base DH prospect. So they have three designated hitters for the most part, and two of them are playing the field, and one of them has a crippling back problem that already kept him out of the duration of spring training. I mean, remember that article over the winter where he was like doing a weird exercise in the weight room proving that his back was fine? He was like swinging an axe or something?
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah, well, clearly it wasn't fine because he didn't play in spring training. So, I mean, the Indians, on the one hand, a lot of people say they're not playing for anything, and they're probably not because Fausto Carmona still sucks and the pitching staff is terrible. And I should have put Jake Westbrook on the all Jane Allison team, by the way. That was a horrible oversight.
Yeah, well,
I mean, the Indians, on the one hand, aren't really playing for much, but you can't have Branyan will get hurt probably in a week, and this arrangement won't last very long, so it's not that big of a deal. But just the Indians are supposed to be one of the smartest front offices in baseball, and they have Russell Branyan playing the field every day and Matt LaPorta playing the outfield every day. They are doing what the Tacoma Rainiers are doing. Like, with their outfield actually has outfielders now. They did what they did last year.
Right.
I don't understand it.
No. It's interesting, although I think I guess they're going to switch between like Laporta in left and Austin Kearns in left, but then I don't know what they're going to do with Laporta when Kearns is starting. Are they going to, I mean, I guess they're benching him or something, but it's like you're benching Matt Laporta.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe he's busted at this point, but and it's been a while since I've looked at him, but that seems like he should be playing.
Yeah, he's not busted. I mean, he could bust. I mean, Andy Marte busted there, right? So it's maybe Cleveland is just like a life suck. I know there's concern that Laporta is not still over. I think he had off-season like toe surgery or something. Well, he was a little banged up. It's like a Rob Johnson to some degree, except with talent.
Okay. Well, that would possibly be an explanation. But so instead of Russell Branyan, the man we do have, though, at first base, Casey Koschman's been on a little bit of a tear.
How much are people liking Casey Koschman right now? I mean, he homered in two consecutive games, which is only two consecutive games, but it's Casey Koschman. Like, I've posted about this before. I'm starting to realize I've posted about everything before. I don't have original thoughts anymore.
Nobody has an original thought.
I can just post archives of the website, and that'll be my freshman content. Casey Koschman.
That thought itself is an original because you've mentioned that to me like four or five times too.
I can't believe I still do this. There's nothing new. The world is repeating itself.
That's why we podcast. That's new.
You know what's not repeating itself? Casey Koschman, because this is brand new. Like when the Mariners traded for Casey Koschman, everybody was like defense, 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 but he's going to hit into a lot of double plays. So in your head, when people would think Casey Koschman, the hit that they imagined, I think, was always like rolling over on a grounder to the middle infield, right?
Yeah, well, it was basically like Griffey, but more towards the middle infield instead of pulled. Yeah. I think that was the image in my head.
So, I mean, obviously that's unfair, and everybody knows that hitters don't just have one kind of hit unless they're Ichiro. Like, but that's just what people thought Koschman would do, like 75% of the time. And so it's one thing to see him hit line drives and then think, wow, he hit the top of that ball. That's a good job. But he's slaughtered a couple balls. Like his double was well hit. His home runs are well hit. He killed that home run in Texas, for God's sake. And we've seen him, the home run in Texas was on a high fastball, I think. We've seen him go deep on some low pitches. It's just like, I can't explain it. And he's had these hot streaks before, so there's no evidence that this is the one that's going to change everything. But
right. Talk
about an encouraging couple weeks.
Yeah, it's always nice when you have like the questionable addition or whatever, much like Russell Branyan last year when it was kind of like, I don't know, but then he was just like, I'm just going to be healthy and hit home runs. Like, oh, sweet. That worked out.
I wonder if Casey Koschman is making Milton Bradley jealous. Maybe he's bad for chemistry in that regard.
Yeah, oh, well, also, you know.
Yeah, sorry?
No, it's just nothing.
But Casey Koschman, for good measure, has more walks than strikeouts.
I guess he does.
He's always been right on the border.
I need some filler because I need to double check this.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So he's always drawn a good, almost a 1-to-1 ratio, throw in some intentional walks, but he still has 6 walks and 4 strikeouts, which is terrific. He doesn't get himself out, or he hasn't gotten himself out.
No, okay. So, and I also just double checked this since it's correct. He also has a 26% line drive rate according to BIS, or a 31% line drive rate according to MLB. Which is, you know, really freaking good. His batting average on balls in play, .250. So not only is he, you know, drawn more walks and strikeouts and he's shown some power, he's getting massively unlucky on his batted balls.
He's been worse. His numbers are worse than they ought to be, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why can't he give any of those line drives to Jose Lopez?
Right.
God, I mean, you look at this team right now, you have Griffey grounding everything between first and second, and then you have Lopez grounding everything between third and short. It's like they've just adopted, I mean, Lopez has gotten his hits because he's not an old pile of shit, but there's no power at all in Lopez's swing right now. It's like we're going right back to his, 2006 second half, 2007, whichever one where he stopped hitting for power completely.
Yeah, it's really, just, I don't know. I really wanted him to actually be serious about the whole 50 walk thing.
Well, maybe he was. Maybe he just doesn't know how to implement it.
Maybe he doesn't know how to count to 50.
Maybe he doesn't know how to count to 4, I think, is the bigger problem.
2 balls, that's a walk.
Jack Wilson has 3 doubles. Jose Lopez has 1.
And Actually, Jose Lopez's line drive rate's really good right now.
You know what? That's clear. Shut up. I don't care. I meant the power. Go to hell. God, Mike Sweeney sucks. Let's talk about Mike Sweeney.
Yeah, I don't actually, and he's taking more pitches than he used to. He's missing more.
Oh, that's weird. Is he trying to hit the ball hard?
I don't know. He's spiked is he can't hit pitches out of the strike zone. Hmm. He's missing twice as much as before, so I don't know what his deal is. But maybe, I don't know, it's encouraged. Maybe, so Jose Lopez actually is possibly hitting the ball decently well, and he's just gonna, also getting kind of unlucky.
Yeah.
Also, he can't draw walks.
Right. So I've been making fun of the Rangers for having three guys with home runs, and like Nelson Cruz has 70% of them.
Yeah.
But
that's
the Mariners
now
have
us.
Three guys with home runs, and Casey Kochman has half of them. Casey Kochman leads this team in home runs. That's weird. And I know Milton Bradley had one pulled back. I'll never forget that, because it's one of those things where you always want to put in his stats because
you feel bad for him. You just really want him to have it.
He's a legitimate home run, goddammit. He shouldn't be penalized for Rajai Davis being amazing. But we have six home runs. Rob Johnson has one. Casey Kochman has three. Like, I love Goody's hot streak, and Lopez has apparently hit the ball hard a couple times. But, like, I want to see a couple more balls clear the wall.
Yeah, we could really, just like how I mentioned, like, that 11-run game and all that stuff, like, would have really helped the offense. And, hey, it has kind of helped ally a lot of the feeders. Like, a nice 4-home-run game would be just killer. Can we get Jared Washburn on an opposing team so he can come in here and throw some – that game was awesome.
God, that game was perfect. It could not have gone better.
It really couldn't have.
The Mariners right now – have six home runs, which is actually not in last place because of the blessed Astros, who have three. I just compiled this morning. That right now, the Astros, by the way, have a batting line of .215, batting average, .240 on base, and .285 slugging, which gives them a lower OPS than Juan Uribe's slugging percentage.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're getting Lance Berkman back, Tuesday night, which is good for them. And what's amazing is the Astros aren't completely out of it as bad as the Orioles are. But the Astros have 12 walks and 77 strikeouts and 3 home runs. It's just, it's an entire lineup of guys that Tony La Russa bats behind the pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things again, you know, it's April, home games in Seattle in April.
Right.
It's a tough environment to hit home runs in. Oakland's not an easy environment to hit home runs in.
Yeah.
Texas isn't really Texas when it's not in the summer. Mm-hmm. So,
I was just browsing these stats, but both the Twins and the A's, the Twins and the Phillies have nearly as many walks drawn as strikeouts so far, which is incredible as offenses. It doesn't really mean much to us, but hey, those teams can hit.
Yeah, or draw walks.
Or draw walks, but it's both.
A long way. Switching off of offense.
Uh-huh.
We can talk about some pitching, and we can talk about Doug Fister.
Doug Fister. I made a note to talk about this today, and I just accidentally closed the tab, so give me a second.
Filler. From what I understand, you have some skepticism about Doug Fister going forward.
I wouldn't say skepticism. I don't know how many people have an inflated opinion of Doug Fister at this point. Obviously, things will be a little different coming off a start like the one he just had. And people still look at his unthinkable, like, strikeouts and walks in Tacoma, which were unthinkable.
Yeah.
I mean, he did in Tacoma basically what Carlos Silva did in 2005.
Right.
But, I mean, there's no Mariners fan who's going around like, Fister's amazing. He is just what he is. He's a guy like Silva who actually does throw strikes and just allows a lot of balls in play. And the reason that we like him more than Silva is because he's getting paid like let me do the math here. 136 roughly as much per season, and he isn't a dick, and he looks like Ian Snell. He does. I swear to God, you guys are blind. I'm not the crazy one. He looks just like with his fuzz. He has, okay. So Doug Fister doesn't actually look like Ian Snell. What I'm saying is that there are moments that Doug Fister looks like Ian Snell, which is remarkable because Ian Snell is black. Like, that's a weird thing, but they both have the cheekbones and the scruff and the little, like, mouth that's partly open when they're looking into the catcher. It was, I don't know, you guys are crazy. But the weird thing, so when Carlos Silva would pitch with the Mariners, people would call him Carlos Silva the sinker baller. Just put him in, you want ground balls. And Carlos Silva never really got that many ground balls. But Carlos Silva does throw a ball that sinks. Doug Fister doesn't throw a sinker. He has a fastball that's slow. It's important to realize there's a difference between a sinker and a slow fastball that gravity touches.
Right.
If you look at Doug Fister's pitch FX movement, it's just a straight fastball. He throws it 88 miles per hour, and it just moves basically in a straight line with little like horizontal tilt. But there's no sink at all. He's never posted much of a ground ball rate, so there's no evidence that he's a ground ball pitcher or a sinker ball pitcher. He's just a guy who throws a fastball that drops because the earth has certain properties that act on moving entities. I think people just look at Fister and think he has to be a sinker baller because all he ever does is throw this goddamn fastball over and over. And the only people stupid enough to do that are guys with sinkers. Sinkers, that was a weird list. But
yeah.
Fister doesn't have a sinker. He just throws his fastball over and over anyway because it's the pitch that he has the best location for, of the pitch with which he has the best location. So Doug Fister, not a sinker baller. There's a difference. Doug Fister's a guy who lives off of his fastball, but I don't know how, and it doesn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm I defended Doug Fister in the piece with Camden Chat, in that really, if you just look at his numbers, if you ignore the scouting, mm-hmm. He looks like a pretty decent middle of the rotation guy. He throws strikes. He doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. He doesn't get a lot of ground balls, but he gets enough strikeouts. Like, his strikeout to walk ratio has been really good. It's been really good everywhere. Mm-hmm. He gets enough ground balls, so he's not really a fly ball pitcher. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of a neutral batted ball profile. But when you combine, you know, average on ground balls with a good ground ball to a good strikeout to walk ratio, hey, that's a good pitcher. Mm-hmm. But then you watch him pitch, and you're like, how does he do it? I don't understand. And it's irritating because you look at his curveball, you look at his changeup, I'm like, those look like good pitches. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of vertical movement to them. Mm-hmm. His fastball, he doesn't really get, like you said, he doesn't really get a lot of horizontal movement to it, but I'm wondering if he doesn't get a lot of vertical movement because of his height. And although I would think that would kind of result in more ground balls, maybe just the fact that it's slow and it doesn't have any other movement mm-hmm. keeps it from being a sinker type fastball. There's got to be like some reason why his fastball is not just destroyed.
So a couple of people have made this comparison, and I think it works. I want to talk a little bit about Doug Fister versus Chris Young. You know, the Padres' Chris Young, mm-hmm. where Chris Young has no repertoire at all. I mean, he basically embarrasses himself when he pitches. It's terrible. It's awkward and uncomfortable. Yeah. And like, you watch him pitch and you think, whoa, he doesn't look like he's done this before. Like, he looks like he's acting in a movie and he's trying to throw a baseball. And it's like, take 15. Come on, Chris. You look more like Freddie Prinze Jr. But so when Chris Young was traded, Chris Young came up the Rangers system and he was a prospect. Nobody knew how or why. Then he went to the Padres and he succeeded. And I talked with Dave Cameron about this a bunch of times, but like, if you would watch Chris Young pitch, you would think the same things we think about Fister right now. How does that happen? Like, there's no reason for him to not suck a lot. But the thing with Chris Young is he's 6'10". I mean, his fastball was no better than Fister's at this point because of all the shoulder problems. It's actually worse.
But, yeah.
Young is just, he's tall, has a weird delivery that's like really unpleasant to watch.
Yeah, it really is. And it feels like it would negate all of his height advantage. But, it's like he's really self-conscious about it on the mound. How can I get as small as possible without like burrowing into the mound?
God, he's, what an awkward, goofy looking guy. But anyway. People struggled to hit Chris Young's fastball. Like, they couldn't touch him. When he went over to San Diego, he struck out 164 batters his rookie year, which is a lot. And he did that in Texas, too. And I think it's because his height is such that he releases the ball closer to the plate, and he has this weird deception because he's so unpleasant to look at, and he has a lot of moving parts. So it's not – remember, it's never just about the pitch. I mean, Ian Snell throws a faster fastball, but there's reason to believe that Ian Snell's fastball gets on the hitter slower than Doug Fister's. So there's more to it than the speed, more to it than the movement. I don't know enough about mechanics, and I don't have access to enough film to know just how much closer Fister releases the ball to home plate, but we've seen all of Brian L's slow motion videos, which, by the way, are fantastic. I hope he's listening to this, because that's a really good work. We've watched those videos. We've seen that Doug Fister has a lot of moving parts when he throws. He's really spindly, and like there's just legs and elbows everywhere. It's like he's a cricket, basically, in a uniform. And so I think what we have to presume right now, the difference between Fister and Chris Young is that Fister doesn't miss bats like Chris Young. I mean, Chris Young was a strikeout pitcher, and I think that's because Chris Young just, like, pounds the upper part of the strike zone.
Well, yeah, Chris Young was a massive, massive fly ball pitcher.
Yeah.
And he also didn't throw strikes.
Yeah, so Young clearly pitched for more strikeouts than Fister. And also, I guess the fact that Young pitched so high helped the ball arrive at the plate even faster, because there's just less distance to cover, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, even though Fister doesn't miss bats like Young because he pitches differently, I think we just have to assume that there's something in his delivery, probably tied to his height and his weird legs, that makes him difficult to hit. And that's why he's better than you would think just based on his very pedestrian repertoire.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm hopeful that he's a better and younger version of the good Chris Jakubauskas.
Yeah. And you think about it, we'll have Felix, and we'll have, hopefully, Bedard comes back and is okay, and we'll have Lee, and then all of a sudden, this back of the rotation that we've talked about it before isn't as bad as a lot of people made it out to be.
No.
But it's going to be a dilemma now. I mean, what do you do with a Fister, and do you keep them both? Do you do something with Snell now?
No. Yeah.
Like, I mean,
not only will it be better, but, you know, it's a lot of depth, too. You've got, if you want to go with, like, Fister and Vargas, you've got Snell, you've got Luke French, who's looking pretty decent down in Tacoma. You've got a lot of options if things, you know, when Eric Bedard goes back on the DL.
I like the idea of having a guy like Fister. I mean, and back of the rotation pitchers always have their problems. They're back of the rotation pitchers for a reason. It's like middle relievers. People complain about middle relief, but middle relievers are middle relievers for a reason. Doug Fister's a 5-starter, maybe a number 4, but I love having a starter back there, or at least a 6th starter maybe, who can come in and he just won't put men on base unless they hit it. I love a guy that can throw strikes and misses enough bats to be useful. When you walk guys, you get into trouble really, really quick. You end up coming over the plate. You 4 strikes, those get hit. And
yeah. Well, just watch an Ian Snell start.
Yeah. I mean, would you rather watch Doug Fister? Would you rather start a game with Doug Fister or Ian Snell right now? It's really as simple as that.
Yeah, well, I'd rather start a game with Luke French than Ian Snell right now. So it's which irritates me because I really want Ian Snell to be good.
I feel like I'm forcing the benefit of the doubt, but you know, like I didn't give Jose Lopez any benefit of the doubt when his fucking family died.
Yeah.
It's like I still don't. So it's hard to say because I like Snell. I want him to succeed. Maybe this death really did impact him. I mean, he was sick in his last start. But really, we need to see some signs of life from him quick, because otherwise, the team can't just keep him starting when he's walking more than he's striking out.
Yeah, I think the discouraging thing for me is not so much, just like the way he struggles, it doesn't seem like it's something that's really related to like a mental distraction. Yeah, his location isn't good, and that's part of it, but it's also just like his stuff is not good. Like, he needs to fix his fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's short-arming it and it's coming in at 89 miles an hour, it's just, you know, it's not a weapon. And if he can't use the fastball as a weapon, his slider really lacks the surprise, and he doesn't have a pitch to lefties. So,
and, of course, in his last start, he was just throwing a ton of fastballs instead of anything off-speed.
Yeah, so it's like he really, I don't know, he needs to get the fastball back up and then try to work, you know, work the slider off of that again. And at this point, if he just started being serviceable, I'd take it. I don't really have any hope that he's going to go back to being that kind of 2-3 win pitcher that he was with Pittsburgh before his extension.
Mm-hmm.
So that's irritating because it was the thought of him taking that major step forward. That would have been a big boost to our team team talent.
Yeah, and we shouldn't write it off. We have no idea how something mental would actually manifest itself. It could be poor stuff, poor preparation. It could be anything.
Yeah, I don't want to be confused that I'm writing it off completely, but more just like I'm writing off the hope.
Yeah, but the good news is we don't necessarily need him, with Fister and Vargas both looking good.
Yeah,
like major league starters.
Yeah,
our worst two starters right now have been Ian Snell and Ryan Roland Smith.
Yeah, and it's legitimate. Yeah, Roland Smith has not pitched too well in his first three starts, but. I'm there's nothing about what he's done that's really worried me so far.
It's not like his stuff is any worse. It's just, you know, when you throw the same repertoire, you'll have a weird three-start streak.
Yeah, he's just not getting strikeouts. He's not missing. I mean, he's not missing bats, but he's never really missed that many bats. It's really, there's not anything that's different right now than there ever has been. So it's just, I don't see any reason to draw any kind of concerns about him.
Yeah. It's one of those, I mean, so he's faced a ton of righties so far. That doesn't help. It's just one of those things where when you look at a small sample of stats, people are inclined to try to find a reason, and there's just no reason for Ryan Roland Smith. He's throwing the same stuff, same results. They've just given him a weird walk and strikeout total. He should be fine. He's not hurt. I mean, whatever. You can't be worried about Ryan Roland Smith. He's the same guy he's ever been.
No. And hopefully we'll see, some more of that cutter. Or some of that cutter. But, well, you know, whatever. If you want. I'm not going to get into debating about new pitches because it's not spring training anymore. We can talk about actual things. And, well, speaking of pitch types and speaking of the fastballs, so Brandon Leake's been just pumping up fastball so far. Yeah. And he hasn't been throwing that splitter, which is kind of irritating. But that's not what I want to talk about because – that's a weighty discussion for the near future, but it is one thing I noticed that when Brandon Leake gets talked about on LL, especially when it comes to Brandon Morrow, there does still seem to be a lot of people, not that there shouldn't be or whatever, but there's a lot of people that still really hate that trade. Maybe I shouldn't use the word still because it's not like either one of them has done anything to further clarify the position. Brandon Morrow has pitched like Brandon Morrow has always pitched, and Brandon Leake has pitched like he's pretty much always pitched. So there's been no change and no surprises so far. But I don't know. It stuck out to me because I'm firmly in the camp that I like the trade for us. I like Brandon Leake more than I like Brandon Morrow. I don't recall exactly, but I think you sort of agree with me.
Not as
strongly as I do, I don't think, but.
No, but I am in love with Brandon Leake as a pitcher. I'm not in love with Brandon Morrow. So I thought it was a pretty even trade my initial response is more out of surprise that I thought it was an unusual move, but I love Brandon Leake's stuff. You don't find a lot of pitchers like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just wondering if you had any opinion. Like there's a lot of people that are still really, really infatuated with Brandon Morrow's potential.
Yeah.
And everybody keeps like, well, if he just turns into an average star, and it's like, well, you know, it's just funny because it's like, I feel like I addressed this pretty effectively, like the day after the trade.
Yeah, but you know, people, I need to repeat things over and over.
Maybe I should just repost the article I wrote about Brandon Leake that actually happened to be about Brandon Morrow.
Maybe there's something like the Mariners fans have gotten used to having these prospects, pitching prospects that never really did anything. They would always get hurt. So the fact that Brandon Morrow didn't actually get significantly hurt maybe made them a little excited. And people have never, ever, and I don't think they ever will get over evaluating players by their peak. I mean, I wonder how much of a setback it was when Brandon Morrow had the first start that he did in the major leagues. Because people saw that against
The Yankees.
Yankees, for God's sake. And it's like, holy shit, look what he can do. And so that was the first thing in everybody's mind.
Yeah, it's you know, first impressions. It's not even just the judging by his peak, but it was also first impression, which is unbelievably hard to shake. So, you know, to a degree I understand it, but I don't know. I just found it weird that it seems so prevalent still.
It's actually surprising to me that people were so supportive of. I think people hated Brandon Morrow but still loved him. They loved the asset, but they hated the pitcher. Because, hey, it turns out that a guy with that kind of stuff and that kind of pitching is annoying. But
yeah.
Like, with all well, the yeah, that's,
That's a good point. You bring up this, like, when Brandon Mora was on the team, he was, you know, more hated than Jose Lopez for his inconsistency, for his walks, for his attitude, his constant role shifts. He got dumped on a lot, but then it's like as soon as we traded him away, everybody was like, oh, well, I love Brandon Morrow.
It's weird though, because you think people would dump on him because, hey, we picked him over Lindskog, and I think that pissed a lot of people off. Like, hey, we wanted Tim Lindskog, not you, you stupid son of a bitch. So you think that would, like, where maybe people were just trying to milk something out of him, but I thought that would turn them against him from the start. So I don't know, it's weird, but I think there's still, I don't think it's like unanimous that people still miss Brandon Moore. I think there's a lot of people who don't. I know a lot of people would look at his starts with Toronto and take glee in the fact that he was wild, except for the, when he almost no-hit the AAA Royals yesterday, I guess.
Right. Because,
hey, by the way, he'll mix in some good starts with his terrible ones.
Yeah, but, and it's the Royals. And it wasn't even the good Royals, because like somebody was pointing out that the Royals were like, and they have, to a degree, have hit pretty well this year, but this was like the Royals' B lineup. So, I don't know.
It's weird with a pitcher like Morrow. I mean, it's like you don't find a lot of relievers with league stuff. Well, you don't find a lot of starters with Morrow stuff. But at the same time, Morrow, it's hard to call him a starter right now because he's new to it. He's just a pitcher in the starting role. And it's easy to be tantalized by his ceiling, but you just... people need to understand how difficult it is to achieve that ceiling, and there's no indication, there's never been any indication that Morrow's making progress.
Right. And he would need to achieve that ceiling, you know, post-haste, because he's already burned up a lot of service time. So, I don't know. Now I'm sufficiently curious enough that I'm going to create a poll, and I'm going to run it in about 5 minutes. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, you can contrast the results of the poll with what we just said, and I may have just ruined this entire line of discussion.
So let's see, Morrow right now is 2 years of service time on his belt on 91 days, so he's still got 4 more years, right?
Yeah, well, he has one fewer year of service time than Brandon League mm-hmm. has. So League will be a free agent 1 year sooner than Morrow will. But oh, I don't know. That was never really an issue for me.
We don't have any players represented by Bean Stringfellow. Disappointing. I don't know what inspired me to look that up.
Is he an actual agent?
Oh, yeah. No, I know because he's Billy Wagner's agent. And the first Wagner signed with the Mets, like, I don't know, 4 years ago. And I was reading about it, and I thought, Wagner, Bean Stringfellow? This is a man? Like... He's an agent, so I don't know. Do agents go to law school?
Probably some of them do.
Is he like Bean Stringfellow Esquire? I mean, I don't have a joke for that name because the name is the joke. Like his name.
The
is
Honorable
Bean Stringfellow. Excuse me, sir. This is Bean Stringfellow here, calling on behalf of one William Wagner. I think that's actually – I wonder if he has any other players. I don't want to look this up right now. It's a podcast. Mm-hmm. But Bean Stringfellow, it's one of those things that there's not enough jokes about him yet, which I guess is good because we don't want to kill the joke.
Right. You know, now that I think about it, William Edward Wagner sounds kind of like a Jane Austen player.
God damn it. Isn't Wagner a German name?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but if I could go back, I would get rid of those Irish names. I could have one or two to be like bench players as servants, but I did – I should have done that. And then I have a Jew in fucking Hofpair. Like, I can't have a Jane Austen Jew.
No,
I wish I knew anything about literature. People, that was posted on, like, it was briefly on NPR's website. It made something called austinblog.com, which is a thing that people
I saw
read.
That.
Like, people are like, oh, man, it's mixing literature and baseball. That's wonderful. No, it's not. I was just, Jane Austen was a stand-in. It's basically the baseball team with proper names team.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe it's an untapped little niche and maybe you should go with it. Maybe the Charles Dickens.
Yeah, I know. Rewrite Jane Austen books, except instead of the characters, they're going to be baseball players. That's something that's never been done or anything like it. Pride, Prejudice, and Blake Hawksworth.
Yeah, I don't.
Sense and Sensibility and Bean Stringfellow. At least I know those two names, right? And For Emma, so it's not just... Or is it just Emma? For Emma's a Bon Iver song. That's weird. Oh, okay. Okay, so full disclosure, I don't know anything about Jane Austen. That was a fluke post. Turned out to be like the most popular post on Look at Landing History, which is weird, because I've come to realize that the most popular posts are posts that don't require a whole lot of reading.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Tough to say. But I've run out of topics to discuss, and hockey's about to start, so
hold on,
do you have anything?
Something. Let me force something. Let's see. In a hurry. What do we got?
You didn't really rant about anything this week.
No, I haven't ranted about anything because I'm not in a ranty mood. I'm in a, oh my god, hockey's coming up mood, so Adam Moore, start hitting.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be really nice. Adam Moore, I don't want to give up on you already, especially after I invested so much time in hating on Rob Johnson and talking about how much better you were. But hey, you know, it turns out that dropping a couple easily catchable fastballs doesn't actually impact the team as much as allowing catcher interference calls against you. So try to, you know, shape up with that. And also, if you got on base once, once, that would be pretty good. That's a start. Let's start with once.
Yeah, you know, it would be progress if Adam Moore did something stupid on the base pads.
Yeah, it would be progress.
And Sean Figgins, by the way, hitting .217, .350 OBP.
Yep.
Yeah.
Walks. Walk. Woo!
Walks. Yay, podcast over. Hockey, go!
Bye.
Bye.